Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Hey, y'all. Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start today right here in Los Angeles. All right, the death of Todd Gurley as the Rams' featured offensive player is no Agatha Christie murder mystery. This isn't Murder on the Orient Express. What's happening to Gurley is more rap song than mystery.
Okay.
Cash rules everything around Todd Gurley.
Cream it.
Dollar bills, y'all. Yesterday, the media once again questioned Gurley about his usage so far this season. He's averaging just 12 carries per game. During Sunday's loss to Tampa Bay, Gurley carried it just 5 times. Gurley is clearly frustrated, and yesterday that frustration seeped into his interaction with the media.
Doesn't really matter, home or away, same stuff. Just like every walkthrough, same mode, just another day. Still lost, don't matter. I don't remember, it was last year, so. New year, new game. I think I've asked you to, you asked this question before, so take the answer I gave you last time.
All right, this is the Wu-Tang song, Cream. The record investment the Rams made in quarterback Jared Goff is what has changed the Los Angeles offense. These offensive-minded young head coaches, the ones raised on analytics, don't believe in running backs. They're all in search of their Tom Brady or Peyton Manning or Ben Roethlisberger, a quarterback who can keep a head coach employed for a decade or more. Sean McVay decided Goff was his Tom Brady, and McVay played a role in convincing the Rams to give Goff $110 million in guaranteed money this offseason.
Wow.
McVay has spent the first month of the season trying to justify that investment. Mystery solved. McVay isn't protecting Gurley's knee or saving him for later in the season. McVay is validating a $110 million line item on the Rams' budget. The business of football works the same as any corporation. The boss brings in a new employee or promotes an underling, and then the boss spends the next 2 or 3 years justifying his decision, oftentimes at the expense of the rest of the team. My suspicion is that McVay was indifferent when the Rams made Gurley the highest paid running back in football a year ago. That decision was more likely driven by general manager Les Snead. Paying golf record money? That's on McVay, or it's on McVay and Snead. I further suspect Gurley knows exactly what is happening. He can't voice his complaints publicly. The Rams paid him during a time when the value of running backs is being diminished. The solution is for Gurley to do his job at a high level when his number is called and wait for his bosses to figure out they made a mistake overpaying Goff. That'll happen around 2021. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analysts Eric Mangini and Bucky Brooks. Marcellus, I'll start with you. All right, you agree with me that...
I love those questions. You agree with me.
You agree with me
that... Fun show.
That Sean McVay has diminished Todd Gurley to justify Jared Goff.
Oh, man, look, that's certainly one of the slices in this pie. So I do agree with you. But I don't think that takes this into account in its totality. I think there's other things here at play. This is the greatest mystery in the NFL right now outside of what's going on between Antonio Brown's ears. Like, other than that, this is the one that is captivating. All right, I got 3 theories. One, I'm going to support chores in terms of incentive-shaped behavior. Since we pay the player, we have to play the player. And sometimes that's to the tune of phasing other people out. Rob Johnson comes to mind. Started one game in Jacksonville, got paid $25 million for my Buffalo Bills. Came out there 0-3, got benched, lost his job to a Pro Bowler in Doug Flutie. Went the entire year, went to the playoffs. Next year, Doug Flutie's a starter. Rob Johnson plays in a meaningless game right before the playoffs of the next year and does well. Flutie was just being rested for the playoffs. Next thing you know, Rob Johnson, because of that $25 million, who's been on the sidelines basically for a year and a half, almost 2 years, got to put him in the playoff game. Let's see what he could do. You know what happened in that. It was called Music City Miracle, and we lost. So that's lane one. You can support someone in that respect. Lane two, Sean McVay's like, hey, Todd Gurley has disappeared before me. Don't act like he didn't have 26 games in a row, and 25 of them he had fewer than 100 yards. So don't act like this is all on me. He's had his dry spells as right now of the last 9 games, 8 of those fewer than 100 yards. But here's the conspiracy theory. Let's go here. Todd Gurley got paid in July 2018. That same year, December, the shop aired. And y'all remember Todd Gurley sitting there on the shop while LeBron James and others were talking about NFL owners having a slave mentality? And Todd Gurley didn't correct that, not in tweet, post show, or not in the edit we saw live broadcast. I'm here to tell you that Stan Kroenke got a little more petty in him than y'all think. Do y'all remember when Stan Kroenke left St. Louis and how he let them people know it was on y'all, not on me? You add all those things up, now you got 3 slices of the pie that tells me the entire picture. I went there.
You mentioned that at the time, too.
I did. I said,
this ain't. You've been consistent on the Todd Gurley thing, because I've heard you on radio talk about it years ago when Todd Gurley was struggling. Here's what I'll say. Sometimes I think it's natural for a team and a front office coaching staff. Sometimes when you get fascinated by a player, the player's been paid. Jared Goff has been paid. You're trying to show people, like, look how far my guy has come. I think what they have to do is they got to get back to understanding. Todd Gurley's the engine to that offense. When that offense was running, it's because he was running well. He was catching passes out the backfield. The play-action passing game was phenomenal. And all of those things worked. And Jared Goff was a complement to that. Sometimes we want the quarterback to be the driving force of the offense before he's ready. And what we're seeing right now is Jared Goff isn't ready. And it's only a matter of time before they look at the film and they realize, hey, we got to go back to making sure that Todd Gurley is the focal point and then everything else speeds off of that.
Yeah, this to me is more like a Judy Blume mystery than an Agatha Christie mystery. The idea that they're featuring the quarterback because they paid him an insane amount of money. They paid Todd Gurley an insane amount of money. It's not like we're talking about a rookie free agent and a guy who's been paid through the roof.
He ain't got $110 million guaranteed.
Okay, well, but he got the highest amount any running back has ever gotten in the history of the NFL. Sick. And a lot of people would say that's insane. Okay, now if you look at his per carries, since he got hurt, the 3 games in the playoffs, he had 10 carries a game. He's actually up in carries since he's had 10 carries. So let's factor that in as well. And then is anybody going to even talk about the fact they were down 21-0? How many teams run the ball a significant amount when they're down 21-0 in a game? The game took shape. Maybe they should take some more of that money and put it on the defensive side when you give up 50 points. And how many times do you come out of a game and say, hey, we scored 40 points and lost? Usually 40 points is a really good number to win games. So the whole idea of, like, that this is some conspiracy theory or they're mad at him or any of that, it's no. It's not even close.
Coach, you letting those facts get in the way of a good story.
No, what you said with Agatha Christie or Judy Blume, it's all fiction. So, yeah, it's fiction.
And to pretend that NFL teams or pro sports franchises or any corporation doesn't have a bottom line budget that someone up above says, hey, man, justify this. That goes on in football. Yeah. It goes on here. It goes on everywhere. It goes on in factories, everywhere. That's pervasive. And we've seen it time and time again throughout the history of football.
Okay, we could say that, but didn't the head coach get a contract extension? He's got job security. It's not like he's trying to justify a decision to get a contract extension.
I'm trying to just play an ego.
Well, no, because at the end of the day, you want to win more than you want to be right. And that's the most important thing. And these guys have won. They have been very effective. We're 4 games into it. Since the injury, his per carry a game is up. So let's call it what it is. And they're down 21 points and gave up 50.
Oh, look, Coach, I'm going to say this. What's 2 + 2? 4, right? Some things you just don't forget. You don't forget about damn Todd Gurley on your team. And they have forgotten about Todd Gurley in the last 9 games in terms of output. And even in the playoffs, despite the blip we saw in the Dallas Cowboys game, we're like, where's Todd Gurley? Todd Gurley comes to the podium, I'm fine. We don't see you as being fine based on production. The translation of language in the NFL
is production. If you're not even giving them the same opportunities to produce last year and this year, even though it's an uptick, it's still below standard. Todd Gurley now is 16 touches a game. That's down for Todd Gurley. So I'm just wondering, where's the financial capital meet the human capital, where your ego does get involved?
I get that 2 plus 2 is 4, but they also went to the Super Bowl last year.
Yeah.
So that's production. They were 3-0 going into the game. That's production. They were down 21-0. That's reality. And sometimes, as much as you go into a game with a plan, the plan changes based on what happens.
And a lot of times, people, in trying to correct, oh, we're down 21-0, let's lean into this, when you would have been better off staying the course. When you throw the ball 68 times and your quarterback throws 3 interceptions, fumbles once, that's 4 turnovers. Let me tell you what's a coach would rather be down 21-0 than have 4 turnovers, because turnovers will cost you the game. They almost overcame the 21-point deficit, if not for the turnovers.
Can we give them credit for fighting through that and scoring 40 points offensively
with
all the adversity they had? Does the defense take any responsibility in this? Look, the game played out the way it played out. If you were telling me that this was the New England-Buffalo game where it's a tight game and he had that many carries, then I'd say, okay, this does seem really skewed. We're talking about a game where they're down a significant amount off the jump.
Well, let's talk about the mentality. I'm sorry, Bucky.
No, I was just going to say, I just think the play calling is so much different. This year, just looking at the numbers, 64-36 pass run, too many passes. Last year, they were 55-45. It is about the running game and setting it up. And, Coach, you talk about the defense. Well, the best way to play better defense is to not play defense. Control the ball with the running game. It just seems like the Rams have gotten away from what made them really, really good. And even though they're sitting at 3-1, and if they go 3-1 each quarter, they're sitting at 12-4, it just feels different this time around than it did last year.
But Bucky, those statistics are a little bit skewed because you're looking at the end of the year. If we looked at it at blocks of time, it could easily have been more similar to the numbers that we have now. So over the course of the season, let's see where that run-pass ratio comes out. When you look at it at the end of 16, it looks dramatically different than the end of 4.
Eric, and what very well may happen, because this happens with the great coaches, they may spend a game or two off script, and they go back, and that's why they have the self-audits, and they have people that scout their own team, their own employees scout their own team, and people correct. The argument I'm making is not that Sean McVay is some blooming idiot and he's lost control of his team. He's gotten off course the first 4 games to me. Todd Gurley, I think, agrees with me and is frustrated. Let's see what happens Thursday. Maybe they'll correct. Maybe they won't fall down 21-0. Maybe they'll go up to Seattle and we'll see more of Todd Gurley. But to me, if I were scouting them through 4 games and trying to pinpoint, hey, what potentially are we doing wrong? The questions I would be asking if I'm Les Snead or Kroenke, the owner, is like, hey, man, what are we doing here with the quarterback? Are we overexposing him because of the money we paid him? Is this what makes sense for us? What's going on with Todd Gurley? Those are legitimate questions.
I agree, but I would probably sit back and go, hey, we gave up 50 points. How can we stop that? We scored 40. That's good enough to win probably.
They're going to ask all those questions.
99% of NFL games you could probably win with 40 points. But you give up 50 and it's like, oh, why aren't we running Todd Gurley more?
Well, Coach, you can't win any games only scoring 3 points. And that was the Super Bowl. And when they went out there and put up 3 points against the Patriots, you know what Coach McVay said after the game? Horrible play calling by me. So he keeps showing us that something's wrong, but he's not taking the proper medicine. So we go into this season, and here we go again after last game. Bad play calling. I need to fix it. My thing is this. There's a Kobe mentality I like to talk about. I share some of this as well. It's not just Kobe. You want to win, but you also want to be the reason why you win. How does a coach feel about that? Who I like, who I want it to lean that way. Here's a microcosm of that. Seattle, Super Bowl, against your Patriots, and they are on the goal line, and they don't run the ball. And there were people who were saying, well, there was a reason they didn't run the ball, because there was an incentive to prop up Russell Wilson in that moment versus a Marshawn Lynch. Whether you believe in that theory or not, that is something of human behavior and reality.
It's like coaches aren't human.
Look at that Super Bowl, New England's in a goal line front. They've got man and press man-to-man coverage outside with your best receiver against a back end of the roster DB. It was a pick route. If the guy in the middle had actually come off and done what he was supposed to do, it was a great play. If they had run the ball into a wall of defenders, like other teams have done against New England, that we'd all be sitting back going, why would you run against goal line defense? Because it doesn't work, everybody says,
all the time.
Everybody says, hey, it's wrong. Hey, it's wrong. You do it all the time, but not in 11 personnel. You do it out of big personnel. New England had their goal line front against an 11 personnel offense. That decision made sense, too. Because it doesn't work out, it's like, oh, my God, it's the worst thing in the world. But if you look at it, that was the right decision.
Damn, Eric Cochran over here. Johnny Cochran in here.
I'm just trying to keep it real.
No. That's a great response. It really is. But the only thing I want you to push you on is like, hey, man, these coaches are humans, too. They make emotional decisions that work to their best interests and play to their egos. That's why a lot of coaches fail, because I've seen a lot of good coaches get in that spot and they fail because they don't control their ego, no different than players.
You're absolutely right, but where that happens the most is when the coach is also the GM, because he has to justify those decisions. When the coach is not the GM, then it's a totally different equation. The GM wants to play his cats, and the coach wants to play who's best to win. You get more crossover there. Look, it was a really hard decision in New York not to play Vernon Golston, who we made a mistake on when we drafted him, and we paid him a ton of money. It didn't work out. So to take a step back and say, we can't play that guy because he doesn't give us the best chance to win, it's a hard pill to swallow, and you got to look the owner in the eye and say, yeah, I was wrong. Okay, and it's not easy, but it becomes way more complicated when the guy who's calling the plays is also calling the shots in the draft room.
Yeah, I think you just took us there, Coach, because Les Snead, the GM, who was on the ropes after Jeff Fisher, remember this?
Yes.
And then you take a gamble and you get Sean McVay. All of a sudden you get 11 wins, you get 13 wins, you get a Super Bowl appearance. They're two different people, but trust me, that is a marriage, because Sean McVay has empowered himself by the results, by the success. And maybe it's not like, oh, I got to ask my boss. My boss is actually working with me because I saved his job.
I don't think that's the case. I really think we're looking at this over a four-game span, but that was a one-game aberration where you're down 21-0, where your defense can't hold up. Let's see what this looks like over the course of time, and let's see whether he's all the way back from injury. And look, I don't love the idea of going up in a press conference and sulking. Like, keep it in-house. Move forward. You just came off a Super Bowl win. You're 3-0 and now 3-1. Move forward with a positivity and see whether this is a pattern or an aberration.
Well, yeah, I think the big thing that I'm curious about, and when you talk to defensive coaches around the league, they are saying there's something to threaten Sean McVay in terms of dare him to run the football. Let's see if we can play more coverage than rush and see if he will take the run if it's offered there. And talking to people around the Buccaneers, they talked about they wanted to get it in the game where Jared Goff had to be a drop back passer. Take the run away, make him throw into favorable situations. Obviously, a 21-point lead, it makes Jared Goff a guy that is standing back there playing 7-on-7 without the threat of handing to number 30. I just wonder if Sean McVay can get back on track and keep this team more balanced, because when they're balanced, that's when the explosive plays come in.
All right, welcome back to Speak for Yourself with Eric Mangini, presented by Hyundai. That was a joke about us going at Mangini. You guys didn't. No one liked that joke.
I mean, look,
Eric Mangini,
I ain't going at
him. Looks back.
Ever again.
Time now for our next story. Let's move to Minnesota.
Coaches.
Where the Vikings are trying to bounce back after an ugly loss to the Bears Sunday. Star receiver Adam Thielen was so frustrated by missed opportunities that he called out Kirk Cousins after the game, saying, "You have to be able to hit the deep balls." Thielen later tried to backtrack on Twitter, but yesterday Cousins did something shocking on his radio show.
I really want to apologize to him, because there's too many opportunities where we could have hit him on Sunday. And I've watched the film, and the reality is there were opportunities for him. Adam's not just a really good player or one of the best players on the Vikings. He's one of the best players in the NFL, one of the best players in the world, period, regardless of position. And so we want to, we need to, and when I say we, really, I mean I need to get him more opportunities, get him the football.
All right, the question is, do you like this move by Kirk Cousins? And I kind of do.
yeah, I'm a little less than kind of do. I'm like, look, it's a positive that his ego is not taking up the room to the point where he can't show contrition and say, I apologize for mistakes. That said, ultimately, it does nothing for me because what I'm talking about, you have not fixed. You're just telling me you feel bad that it's messed up. That's fine. But now we got to get on this football field and fix this. And this has been an issue since they got together in terms of even Kirk Cousins admitting, I need to play a little better or may not be long for Minnesota. So it just takes me to those moments when you leave church on Sunday. You know, we all up in there hearing the right things. And then as soon as you walk out in the parking lot, somebody start cursing, somebody start cutting somebody off. Like, damn, can you do the right things, not just hear the right things? So I heard the right thing. I just need to see it, bro.
Yeah, you hear that saying, don't tell me you love me, show me you love me. Mm. And I'm sure that's what Adam Thielen wants to see. He wants to see some sort of change. And I understand his frustration. I don't like him talking about it. I don't think there's any need to do that. I don't really like Kirk Cousins addressing it either. To me, that's something you handle internally. But when you look at this, Case Keenum has very similar stats to what Kirk Cousins had in his first year with a $26 million difference. Mm. Minnesota's the second-to-last team in the NFL in cap space, because they had to pay Kirk Cousins. And Washington hasn't gotten a lot of stuff right, but it seems like moving on from Kirk Cousins was one of them. 13-3 without him, 8-7-1 with him. There's probably a lot of frustration in that locker room because he was brought in to elevate their play, and it looks like now they have to manage him so that he doesn't lose the game. Mm. This has to get fixed. Is there a quick fix? It doesn't look like it based off of the way that they're using him in the early part of the season.
Man, the dangerous thing in the locker room is when you overpay somebody and then you run out onto the field and then you look and you see the talent and you're like, man, this guy is not a $28 million quarterback. And everyone else is being asked to up their game to take care of the guy who is supposed to be the franchise player. It's a problem. And when they haven't won, look, because they won with Case Keenum, and they were on the verge of going to the Super Bowl with Case Keenum. And so now they bring in Kirk Cousins, and the only thing he is brought in to do is to get them over the hump, and they appear to be a worse team, lesser than what they were with a lesser player. Man, it is hard. And I think what we heard from Adam Thielen is the frustration of, man, if we just had a quarterback, we could be that team that everyone expects us to be.
And I'm going to go back to, again, I was someone that said Washington shouldn't pay Kirk Cousins. I was on the record repeatedly. I didn't like him as a franchise quarterback going to Minnesota and pay. I felt like they overpaid him. But now that he's here and you got to work with it, I like him taking responsibility and accountability. I think that Adam Thielen was on the radio show earlier and probably still in the room when Kirk Cousins said these things. And I think it's what Eric said. These type comments go on all the time on football teams in private, one-on-one. This time we just got to hear it. Again, the first step to recovery is admission of a problem. Mm. He's on the record. He's the problem. That's the first step. Now, whether or not he can take the second step, I tend to doubt it. I've never believed in the guy, but at least he's acknowledging he's the problem.
That works in many elements of life, but in the football field, is in the football locker room, that's tough. One, he's not taking responsibility. If I'm walking in the house with a heavy, both hands full of groceries, and you're like, damn, that looks heavy. You know what I need you to do? Take some of these groceries, bro. Feeling like, just give me the ball. I don't want to hear about anything else. And I think when you're a dependent player, see, the beauty of playing defensive line is I couldn't blame anybody but myself. Like, being real, it was just me and an offensive lineman who was like a yard away. But when you're a receiver and you're wide open and you're like, oh, bruh, and you're the man and you're getting paid and you're supposed to be the fixer, coach says keep it internally. He is. It's just bursting through the seams. And it's a collective in that locker room who's like, bruh, we need more than words. And he's not giving it to him.
And what makes it worse is that guy comes through the door with his groceries. The guy who's saying, damn, that looks heavy, is sitting in a hot tub drinking Cristal. And he's smoking a Cuban cigar with a case of money all around. And everybody else is like, you know, I'd really like some of that. And the team sits back and says, well, we'd love to, but it's all right there. So now everybody else is frustrated, and there needs to be some sort of progress because you can't manage a guy with $100 million guarantee. It's just, you can't.
Yeah, and it's tough because they're changing their style of play. This is a team that is running the ball all the time as if their quarterback is a non-issue. They might as well run the single wing for as much as they're trying to run it.
Right.
And so for Cousins, like we can talk about like, hey, I'm glad he admitted it, but man, we're year plus into this.
Right.
You're supposed to be the guy that helps us get over it, and he has not played to that level. And the fact that they're managing games with a $28 million quarterback, that is ridiculous in the National Football League. And I know that you have to pay the quarterback what the market bears, but man, at some point, the production has to match the compensation, and that's why that frustration is coming out.
Joined now by Houston Rockets owner Tillman Fertitta.
And author.
Yeah. Look, and I'm going to start there before we get into all the James Harden, Westbrook questions. Mm. Shut up and listen. Your book, what's it about?
You know, Harper Collins approached me about 18 months ago and said, hey, Tillman, we watch your TV show. We see you on all these business shows and sports shows, and we love your Tillmanisms. Why don't you just tell the tools that took you from having one restaurant to being worth $5 billion. And that's kind of what I do. It's not stories. It's the 95-5 rule. Know what you know what you don't know. There are no spare customers. Take the word no out of your damn vocabulary. And it's just kind of the things that I did to become successful.
So if I read this book, will I someday be on TV and be like, Jason, you started eating at one restaurant, and now you're worth $5 billion.
It's like we're brothers from another. Shut up and listen. Never shut up.
That's us.
Right?
That's us.
Humanism, Wileyisms. Now where my $5 billion at? I ain't got that part. I don't know how that going.
All right. Daryl Morey pulls the trigger on probably the biggest trade of the offseason. Mm. Why did you guys do that, CP3, for Russell Westbrook?
I'll tell you, and it kind of goes back to the book. At the end of the year, me and Daryl and Coach sit down, and we were in my office, and I even said this, hey, we do 95% of everything right. We've won more games than the Rockets have ever won in the last 2 years. What is the 5% we're missing? And we think Russell Westbrook is at 5%. And we feel like he's going to give us something in transition and his athleticism to pick up our pace that we did not have. Now, I think Chris Paul's unbelievable. I think Oklahoma City's going to be better than anybody's given him credit because Chris Paul has a lot of greatness left in him. But I think for the Houston Rockets today, we feel like that Russell Westbrook made us a better team. I remember watching that son of a gun running up down the court last year when they beat us twice and saying, what would it be like to have him on our team? I mean, he is so athletic.
Now, take us into your mindset and the level of concern because of usage rate, because it's going to be a shared experience, one ball, two guys who really do well with the ball in their hands. What are you thinking about that?
They're talking about it, and the two of them have to work it out. I mean, Daryl and me and Mike can talk about it all we want, but the two of them have to do it. You got to remember this. James and Russ came into the league at the same time.
Yeah.
Chris is 4 years older. In basketball years, that's like 20 years, okay, when you look at the longevity of careers. Those two guys played together in Oklahoma City. They played ball in L.A. together. They've known each other a long time. They're both 30 years old, and they both want to win a championship, okay, which is good for me, okay? They're going to work this out. They are working it out right now. This wouldn't have happened. Remember, this trade wouldn't have happened if James Harden didn't say, I want to do this, okay? James Harden pulls the trigger as much as me and Daryl. So,
Tillman, I heard you say after the season or at some point last season about wanting to instill your attitude into the franchise. And it makes, I don't know if that was a level of toughness you were talking about or what, but one of the things I find interesting about Russell Westbrook, and I want your thoughts on this, obviously, is he plays the game with an anger. And I've said, for a guy that handles the ball that much, you got to play the game with more joy. If you're angry, it affects your decision making. What do you think about Russell's attitude, and is that the right fit for the Houston Rockets? Will he maybe add the toughness you're talking about, and maybe I'm missing that? Have there been any discussions about Russell's attitude and the energy he plays with on the court?
Well, and we love his energy, and one thing we all know, you can never make good decisions if you're doing it angry. And And my culture is to win, and it's no matter what I do. But the Rockets are a winning franchise, and when I inherited this team with a great coach, a great player, great general manager, a great operations president, I'm very fortunate, okay? But you know what? They know how bad I want to win. But I don't want to win any more than James Harden doesn't want to win a championship, and Russ Westbrook and Mike D'Antoni and Daryl. They all want a ring, so we're all on the same page. Russ is going to do whatever it takes to make sure that him and James are going to make this work. And if Russ has to slow down a little bit, I'm sure he's going to slow down a little bit. But one of the things I love about him is the way he plays, and I think that's what James loves about him, is the way he plays. But the two of them have to make it work. Mike ain't going to do it. I'm not going to do it. Daryl's not going to do it. But I have faith in those two guys.
Now, you made mention of Coach D'Antoni. Is it title or bust this season for Coach D'Antoni?
I'll tell you right now, it's absolutely not title or bust. Mike's represented well from a very great agent, and we just weren't able to make a deal. But you got to understand, in the business world I live in, Mike's under contract, okay? I didn't even think anything of it. And somebody said, oh, you know, how is Mike going to be a lame duck coach? And me and Mike sat down, and we just said, let's not worry about it this year. We'll get it done after next year. Me and Mike are fine. Mike will be the coach, I promise you, year after next, okay? Mike and I are in a good place, but he's under contract, and we'll put him under a new contract next year.
Tillman, you can pass on this question because Carmelo Anthony was just there a short period of time. I don't know how well you got to know him. So feel free to pass if you don't. But are you surprised Carmelo's not back in the league? I loved his interview he did with Stephen A. Smith.
I did too.
I felt like he had humbled himself and was in the right mindset. Are you surprised no one's giving him a chance?
I'm 100% surprised. And I never got a chance to get to know him that well. But this guy's got a lot of basketball left in him, and he could not have been more of a gentleman, and everybody told me that. But, you know, I talk about this in my book, is I know what I know and I know what I don't know. And they said, hey, let's sign him. And I said, that's fine if y'all think that. And when they decided to release him, I'm not going to tell my basketball people what to do. Okay, now, do I have to give the final, you know, yes, absolutely. But it's something really big has to happen for me to say no when they all want to go the other way. But I'm extremely disappointed that he's not back in the league, even though he might not have been the perfect fit for us. There's a lot of teams that can use Carmelo Anthony and his leadership, and he is just a true gentleman every time I talk to him.
Now, one thing you may not know is your star player, James Harden, is trying a one-legged three-point shot. You in or out on that? Is the check clear?
The check's definitely going to clear. But I don't know if James is going to be shooting that or not. He better shoot at least 35% when he does it, or everybody's going to have a problem. But that's James is James. And what I love about James, and I talk about this in the book again, be the bull. And that son of a gun is the bull. And he his neck can hurt him. His eye can't see. His arm won't come up. That son of a gun's still going in the game. In a time when all athletes are tender and soft, James Harden is the bull, and I just love him for it.
Hey, Tillman, it's great meeting you. I love your energy. Going to read your book. I appreciate you signing for it. If you could, because you're new to sports ownership relatively, you just bought the team, I think, in 2017. How do you see yourself as an NBA owner or a sports franchise owner? Is there any other owner in football or basketball that you point to and say, that's how I want my brand, that's how I want my identity to be?
I probably see a lot of different ones that I like certain pieces, just like I never had a great mentor in business, but I try to learn from different ones. Stephen A. always refers to me as George Steinbrenner, and I don't know if that's a compliment or not.
Well, that's not a championship.
But I love Stephen A. But I truly try to learn a little bit from all of them, But I'm different. Remember, I've been out there a long time. Matter of fact, I was a partner in the Rockets between 82 and 92.
Wow.
Okay? And then I was a partner in the Texans.
You bought them when you were just a child.
No, I was a little partner. I remember.
Were you like 12 years old?
No, but believe it or not, I was only like 22 when they sold for $10 million to Charlie Thomas. So I owned a percentage of them.
Wow.
And then I lost the bid in 92 when Les Alexander paid $80 million, $85 million. We had a bid in at $80. And then over the next 25 years, I had to pay $2.2 billion for him. But I sit in the same seats I've been sitting at for 25 years. Mm. And so I've been around it. And like I said, then I was with Bob and the Texans. But I had to sell it when I bought the Golden Nugget Casino and started rolling out casinos. So I've been around sports a long, long time. But I've been doing this a long time, except used to do it along with business shows. So it's fun to mix in some sports.
Tillman, thank you very much. Yeah,
thanks, gentlemen. A lot of pleasure.
Hope to have you back. Time for That Dude's Dudes. Marcellus, what you got?
Hey, Todd Gurley, run behind these big uglies up here. You get some yards, dang it. This That Dude's Dudes. And let's start off with number three, Notre Dame senior Julian Okwara. Let's look at my man right here. He beats off the edge. Woo! Hit him with that swipe move. Shout out to my man Bruce Smith. And Ugundeje is going in and taking it to the house. Virginia tackle Ryan Nelson. He moves his hands, but damn it, move your feet with your hands. He did not. He's top heavy in this moment. And now, going to use that swipe move. Ooh, oh, my God. I've seen this in practice too many times by Bruce. And now, you see him stick his foot in the ground. Ooh, trying to do the hip turn, sees the ball. Beeline for the quarterback. Bryce Perkins staring down his receiver. Didn't even see it coming. As Okwara forces a fumble. You're our number three That Dude of the Week. Let's go to number two. You know who this guy is. Khalil Mack. Return of the Mack. Yeah, he's back on the show like every week. Khalil Mack ducks under Riley Reiff and strips the apologist, Kirk's Cousins, right here. And Mack starts by sitting Reef down. Sit him down, thinking he's going to do that bull rush. Oh, look at that long step right there. Dip under that. And he did. Travels 4.5 feet on that. Now, all of a sudden, he's in a horrible position. Reef is, and no power on his push. Feet locked together. Ah, now you can see. I see the ball. I see the quarterback. Strip, sack, force, fumble. All those things in one. That's why he's the best at it. Khalil Mack, number two dude of the week. Now let's go to number one. Talking about to be rich. Linebacker Shaq Barry.
Yes, he is.
Barry treasure here. Uses strip. Oh, my God. Spin move, everything. And Dominican Sue, take it to the house. Got the turkey in my hand. It's time to eat. It's time to eat. Beat the Rams 55-40. One-on-one with Rob Havenstein. Oh, look at this play right here. Lazy. Get those arms up. Weak jab, weak punch. Ooh, Barrett with the beautiful spin move. Saw that coming, programmed him. Now he's going to use his arm to say, stay out the club. Got that arm right there. You got to put your arm back to release. And now, oh, my God, knock the hand loose. Epstein just wants to hold, but he knows he can't. And now he sees the ball. It's time to get that gift. This guy has 9 sacks in 4 weeks. On a 1-year deal, about to get that Tillman Fertitta money. Yes, he is about to be rich. My man, Shaq Barrett, you know who you are.
On number pace one, for 36. All right, thank you, Marcellus. Yes, it's time now for Darnell's question of the day. Darnell, take it away.
All right, guys, let's move to another guy who made some headlines Sunday, Vontaze Burfict, who was ejected and then suspended the rest of the year for a dirty hit on Colts tight end Jack Doyle. Well, John Gruden and Derek Carr both weighed in, throwing their support behind a linebacker. Take a listen.
I'm not really going to say anything. I've talked to Runyon in the league office. He knows how I feel. It hurts our team really bad. And I'm anxious to see what the appeal says. I'm not happy about it at all. And I don't want to say anything else. I'm obviously upset about it.
You know, we see other people choking people out, and they're going to play this Sunday. We see other people hitting people in the helmets, and they're going to play this Sunday. And Vontaze Burfict won't play the rest of the year. I think that's a little excessive, if you ask me. He's a great person. His heart is broken because he's not playing football. The guy just wants to play football. We don't get a lot of time to play this game in our lives.
Guys, you have an issue with Gruden and Carr caping up for Burfict?
Yeah, I do. And the reason why is because of the Antonio Brown situation. You just caped up and defended Antonio Brown. He made a fool out of you. Now you're turning around and doing it again. It's just tone deaf. I would have stayed out of this and said nothing. John Gruden made 2 bad decisions, got 2 guys, Burfict and Antonio Brown, of questionable character, and they both blew up in his face.
Yeah, great point. Even though he was measured, still, reputation precedes you, whether it's a good reputation or a bad reputation. That should prepare you for a moment like this. And unfortunately, you have to have a sort of detachment from a player, and you can't
get caught up in this relationship, because this guy is not long for the commitment that it takes to stay on the football field because of fines and penalties and suspensions. So it's on you, Gruden, who is acting like he's new to this conversation about Burfict being a troubled player on the field. So I don't feel any remorse for him in that moment.
Yeah, and I know why he's frustrated. He's their starting middle linebacker, and he's their signal caller, and he gets people lined up and gets everything going. So I get that. But in the draft room, I used to say to the scouts and coaches, look, if we draft someone who's slow and they come here and they're slow, we can't be mad at that guy. That's who they are. So if you bring in a player that has a history of that type of behavior and then he does that type of behavior again and there's a penalty, then you can't be surprised by it. You can't be shocked by it. And really, you shouldn't even be disappointed by it, because it was just a matter of time before it happened. We put such an emphasis on safety. For someone to put someone else at risk in that way, it's just not right. It's just not right. It's too dangerous a game when you play it right. When you don't play it right, it's wrong to everybody else who's participating.
Look, I can't absolve Vontaze Burfict for his previous transgressions. I do believe, coming off Sunday where we saw so many hits, so many violent hits, head-to-head hits, we saw Donovan Smith hit Marcus Peters in the helmet. There wasn't a penalty. There wasn't a flag. My issue isn't with Gruden and Vontaze and whether they say it. My issue is more with the league. I would just like to see a level of consistency when it comes with that. Some of these are penalized. Some of them are not. And whenever we see these hits, we never see them in real time. We always see them in super slow-mo. And so sometimes I would just like people to understand how fast the game is, how violent it is, and all it takes is a little knot. Because Jack Doyle, he could have stayed down. He didn't have to get up. And I think sometimes when you're the defender and you fired your gun, it's hard to change your hitting angle. I'm not absolving him from the hit. I'm just saying it is hard in real time to be like, oh, let me move.
You want the league to be as consistent as Vontaze Burfict. That makes perfect sense. Vontaze Burfict is very consistent. He launches himself and his helmet at defenseless receivers, runners, or whatever, consistently. The league should be just as consistent as Vontaze.
And how ironic, the person who's supposed to give us that consistency is John Runyon. Oh, dirty old John Runyon. Boy, I used to play against Runyon. It's going to be tough for you guys to have.
Former offensive lineman in the NFL.
Yeah, yeah, great offensive lineman. Not dirty, but certainly habitual
on the line.
Habitual
on the line.
Right. It's just, you had to see this coming. We've all rolled the dice in certain situations. I know I did it in my dating life a lot. I knew the reputation, my boy said, and I still went there. So when it happened to me, I couldn't act surprised by that. And John Gruden in this moment, unfortunately.
The WWE is coming to Los Angeles on Friday as SmackDown makes its debut on Fox. Marcellus and I are fired up to be joining the WWE family. In fact, we went ahead and inserted our faces onto some legendary wrestlers. And as you might expect, we fit right into the action. I think I missed my true calling as a WWE superstar. The SmackDown premiere on Fox this Friday will feature some huge names: Hulk Hogan, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Brock Lesnar, and The Rock, Dwayne Johnson. He'll also be there. Be sure to tune in at 7:30 Eastern. All right, Eric Mangini and Bucky Brooks are back.
Brother!
Let's return to the NFL.
Love it.
Where we will see a huge NFC matchup this week with the Cowboys hosting the Packers on Sunday on Fox. Both teams are coming off losses that raise some questions about their head coaches. Jason Garrett had no plan B against the Saints Sunday night and is just 1-5 in his career against the Packers. Meanwhile, Matt LaFleur's offense has been stagnant and his relationship with Aaron Rodgers appears to already be on the rocks or a little bit shaky. Question here is, who needs this win more this weekend, LaFleur or Jason Garrett?
No question, Jason Garrett. I don't even want to hear an argument the other way. Jason Garrett. And it feels different even though they have the same record, and I'll tell you why. Because of the pressure from the owner. All up in the videos, all up in the press box, all on the sideline. Talking about we getting out coached and better philosophies on the other team. So it's just as simple as that. If you want to look at what Matt LaFleur is going through, let's just take a look at his ownership group and this executive committee. Y'all want to take a look at this? Where's my picture? Hello? Picture?
We don't have it.
Oh, look at this. It's a slow process. Oh, that doesn't look like they too mad at anything. They're 3-1 right there. Mutual funds doing great right there. So that's not Jerry Jones and how we know he can be a little more than personable with his coach. So different relationship, and it's coming from the top down.
Matt LaFleur is playing with house money at this point. He's new head coach. The expectations are very low coming in, and the fact that he's gotten off to the start that he's gotten off to is great. But I don't think anybody anticipated that or expected that. No. And they ran into a hiccup last week where Jason Garrett, it's a totally different situation. The expectations have been there from the start of the season. They've transitioned out almost the whole coaching staff besides him over the course of time. They've paid everybody, and eventually they'll pay Dak as well. And there's this underlying fundamental belief that they should win and they should win now. And to lose it at home would be a problem.
I think Matt LaFleur has a lot of pressure because I think the Green Bay Packers got rid of a pretty good coach in Mike McCarthy.
Yeah.
I thought he did a really good job doing his time in Green Bay. And all we heard, their offense is stale. They're doing the same old thing. They're not scoring enough points. If I had the greatest quarterback of all, they should win more Super Bowls. And I'm looking at this offense that they have right now. It's not dynamic. It's not explosive. They're not lighting up scoreboards. And you had a situation last week where inside the five, they had six plays and couldn't punch it in. Four times inside the one, and they threw every down. At some point, I just want to see where's the upgrade. Where's the upgrade in offensive philosophy and production? Because I'm not seeing it. And this is a big game on a big stage for him to show.
Yeah, I tend to think Garrett's probably under the most pressure. I started off the week saying that, look, he could get fired this season if things don't go well. So that kind of boxes me in. However, one guy is dealing with Aaron Rodgers, who's a two-time MVP, arguably the best player in the league, you know, other than Patrick Mahomes. Someone who wants to have success right now at age 35, and if he gets too frustrated, will just snatch back control of this offense. And Matt LaFleur could lose a power struggle, I think, with Aaron Rodgers very quickly. So I think both of these coaches are under incredible pressure going into this game on Sunday. Jason Garrett probably just slightly more, but I don't want to diminish the pressure on Matt LaFleur because he's getting to work with somebody that was in the discussion for the greatest quarterback of all time, and he's not producing results right now offensively. They have gotten to 3-1 off their defense and Mike Pettine. Matt LaFleur needs to deliver.
But only one of those coaches is a lame duck coach. And, you know.
With no
contract, right? What did they say to a man? Don't play with my woman, don't play with my food, and don't play with my money. And guess what? Look at that face right there. If you see Jason Garrett's face, man, he's wearing it. Like, even though I know he's built for this, he's still wearing it. Every single decision, every single game matters so much more when you're playing for that dough. So,
and look, LaFleur's already conceded a bunch of control to Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is calling a lot of plays at the line of scrimmage. That's obvious. But in the grand scheme of things, Aaron Rodgers can affect him to some degree, but Jerry Jones can change your future immediately. So it's a totally different set of bosses that you're answering to in that situation.
Let me say this about pressure, though, too, Eric. What about, to me, Jason Garrett has more tools in his toolbox. He's got a complete roster. And so Matt LaFleur, he's going into a game, because, again, Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers, they're not thinking about being 9-7 or 8-8 and backing into the playoffs. Aaron Rodgers wants to win now. Matt LaFleur wants to prove he's Sean McVay. He doesn't have as many tools to work with going into this big game that Jason Garrett does. That, to me, would be an added pressure on LaFleur, who is the play caller. And over in Dallas, Kellen Moore is the offensive play caller. Chris Richard is the defensive play caller. Maybe more pressure on LaFleur that way.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of pressure. And I think it's a lot of pressure on LaFleur just from, like, having played in Green Bay and understanding the expectations of Title Town. They expect this team to always be in contention. No matter what happened the previous year, they think that Matt LaFleur is going to come back and bring them back to the promised land. They're not going to patiently wait for him to rebuild it while you have Aaron Rodgers. They want to see him win a big game. This is a big game for him. He has to show up. He has to show up and get that offense going.
But you just added pressure with an asterisk, right? You said he doesn't have the full two chest. Then you have pressure with an asterisk. He's a first-time head coach. You've got all these different things that when this game plays out, people are going to say, well, okay, I understand that because of X, Y, and Z. Where the Cowboys, there's no asterisk. Mm-hmm. You've got a full roster. They've almost all gotten paid. You just came off a loss that you got beat because of effort more than scheme. and you're at home, to me, the full component of pressure is there, and there's no asterisk for us to take a step back and say, okay, we understand why it didn't happen.
Got nothing to hide behind. All right, before we go, I'd like to address the Fair Pay to Play Act, the new law signed by California Governor Gavin Newsom that will allow college athletes in the Golden State to financially benefit from their likeness and image. The law is being celebrated as the death knell for NCAA amateurism. Newsom signed the bill on the set of LeBron James' HBO show, The Shop. The fact that it was signed into law on the set of a TV show should tell you everything you need to know about the bill. It's more publicity stunt than game-changing piece of legislation. Newsom and James are brand builders. Newsom wants to be president. James wants to be Muhammad Ali. I know, many of you think I automatically hate anything LeBron James does. You think I have a personal grudge. It's not personal. I just have an aversion to phony, manipulative people who create, who operate like politicians. Politicians build their profiles by taking credit for things they have very little to do with and misleading the public about their true agenda. Newsom and James are positioning themselves as the Abraham Lincolns of college athletics. They're here to free the NCAA slaves. No, they're not. The Fair Pay to Play Act is about the liberation of Nike and other shoe companies. Do you remember the Adidas trial? In 2017, prosecutors arrested a handful of shoe company employees and assistant college basketball coaches and charged them with defrauding universities for violating NCAA amateurism rules by paying players. In March, James Gatto, a middle-aged white Adidas executive, was sentenced to 9 months in prison. You think that didn't shake up the executives at Nike and other shoe companies? The shoe companies need a legal way to funnel money to top college athletes. That's what the Fair Pay to Play Act is about. Yesterday, I talked to a high-ranking shoe executive who told me his company has already had strategy meetings on how to take advantage of the new law because his company expects other states to quickly adopt the standard set in California. LeBron James, like every other good corporate employee, does exactly what his Nike overlords tell him to do. Nike told King James to keep his mouth shut when prosecutors immorally made felons out of James Gatto, Chuck Person, Merle Cole, Christian Dawkins, and others in the Adidas trial. But now James is allegedly liberating athletes. The Fair Pay to Play Act is what my favorite TV show, The Wire, called Dope on the Table. It's a big press conference with pounds of cocaine and heroin displayed on a table and a politician claiming his police chief inch closer to winning the drug war. Nothing has changed about NCAA amateurism. The shoe companies get to repackage their money legally, and liberal college presidents still get to take the money generated by football and basketball and spend it on the sports that don't generate a dime. NCAA amateurism, an institution the architect of the modern NCAA, Walter Byers, analogized to plantation slavery 22 years ago, remains intact. Byers was the NCAA's first president and served until 1988. He was a white conservative from Kansas. He was no radical. Here's how he described the NCAA in his 1997 memoir. Today, the NCAA President's Commission is preoccupied with tightening a few loose bolts in a worn machine, firmly committed to the neo-plantation belief that the enormous proceeds from college games belongs to the overseer/administrators and the supervisor/coaches. The plantation workers performing in the arena may only receive those benefits authorized by the overseers. LeBron and Newsom are the new carpetbaggers. They seem more like Jim Crow than Abe Lincoln. Or speak for yourself after this. Eric Mangini and Bucky Brooks are back. Let's move to Pittsburgh, where the Steelers got their first win of the year Monday night, thumping the lowly Bengals. Mason Rudolph turned in his best performance of the year, while Ben Roethlisberger coached from the sideline. But when asked yesterday about how much Ben contributed to the win, Mike Tomlin said, quote, nothing in terms of playmaking. He went on to say he's into the tangible, not the intangible. The question here is this comment from Tomlin something or nothing?
This is everything. You know me, man. My man crushes. Mike Tomlin in the presser is the realest thing you're ever going to hear, because I love the fact that he is pointing out, one, that our game is translated on the field, like emotions, bullet board material, cheerleaders, preparation. All that has to culminate in the experience between the white lines. And obviously there's a little bait out there for Rudolph in terms of getting him some love in this process. But Mike Tomlin just basically said, I have to empower those who have the power. And the power is with the ball in your hand. The power is you're on the field, not necessarily the communication or the rah-rah that you get off the field.
Look, when I think about this, I think what Mike Tomlin would like to do is keep the emphasis and the focus on the guys that are really contributing, the coaches and the players. And I think he didn't want to cast a big shadow over Mason Rudolph like Ben Roethlisberger propped him up. Let's go back and remember, when Mason Rudolph was drafted, Ben Roethlisberger took shots subtly about them. Hey, man, we sure could have used another player at that point. He didn't act like a mentor then, so why should we act like he was a mentor now? I think Mike Tomlin wants to make sure that the coaches and the players and his teammates get the proper credit for putting on a solid performance on Monday night.
Yeah, when you show up on game day and you offer to help out, that is borderline cheerleading. And you hear his comments that I'll help you as much as you want or as little as you want. The real help happens during the week, and Ben Roethlisberger could impact him during the week in terms of looking at the other defense, studying what they're doing, understanding the game plan, guiding the decision-making. But that all happens Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, not showing up on Sunday. And to me, what Tomlin was saying was he wasn't there helping in during that time period. Yeah, he may have helped a little bit on the field, but that's not significant. That's not going to change much things. So if he's willing to go and do the work during the week to help Rudolph get ready, then I think you'd hear a totally different tune.
Not fanning any flames? Why not just give the coach speak of, hey, anytime you can have a guy with Ben's experience around, it can't be but a plus?
Because it shouldn't be that way. Like, if he's on IR and he's in that building, he should be in the quarterback room. He should be helping that young guy. He should be spending time looking at the other defenses. He's still the leader of this team, so lead in the way that you can. And the way that you can is by going to help the guy who's actually playing play in the best possible way he can. And a quarterback has insight that a quarterback coach doesn't have or an offensive coordinator doesn't have. He could help that guy so much if he would put that work in during the course of the week to get him ready to play on Sunday.
Yeah, that's the preparation is the separation. As you said, during the work week, it's telling that Mike Tomlin said it so bluntly.
I know.
And it's telling because, one, you weren't there, and two, don't try and share some of this shine right now in this moment. And just to be real, it's crazy when you're in those moments and you do something well, and then you just notice the hugs and the rub and, oh, man, and you get into the camera shots. And I'm like, no matter what you told me, I had to go do this. So in this moment, when I'm trying to grow in confidence, if I'm Rudolph, I don't need anyone else to do that. And I'm glad Coach protected his psyche in this place, because Ben Roethlisberger has shown an insecurity to him already, as you mentioned. And it's just kind of obvious. And I think Tomlin wanted to say that.
Look, man, his actions and his deeds, everything has to line up. Whatever he's saying, Ben, Big Ben, his actions have to line up. So if he does show up on game day and now he has all the answers, nah, that's disingenuous. I just want to see if Ben Roethlisberger is really the leader, because we've all heard the stories about him kind of coming and going and doing all that stuff. If he's not working with Mike Tomlin, I don't think Mike Tomlin should give him credit for doing
something. I'm going to go a step further then, based off of what you all are saying. I'm going to go an additional level of what I read into this, because the Steelers are committed to Big Ben by contract extension, and they've said he's going to be their quarterback next year. If your position is true, like, man, Tomlin's kind of calling him out and saying, don't come in here, try to grab some credit when you weren't here all week. This to me says Mike Tomlin's like, he's leaving.
Well, he's connected to Ben because their contracts are going to expire at the same time, because he got his extension. So I don't see that. I just see that this is almost a Carolina situation where Cam Newton is one type of leader, and it's not the worst type of leadership, but it's not ideal. It's not optimal. So whenever you get someone who gives you favorable results and they don't give you those issues of leadership,
you kind of gravitate towards them. And I think that's been an issue in that locker room for so long. Where is the leadership? And we all know what happened to Antonio Brown and Le'Veon.
Yeah, and let's not confuse jet sweeps and wildcats and gimmicks with Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah.
If he's there and he's showing up and he's healthy, it's a whole lot different deal than what they had to do to get the numbers that they got. And they did a nice job of protecting him and creating different looks. You don't have to do that with Ben Roethlisberger. Ben Roethlisberger makes everybody else better by showing up and playing. So he may be mad, he may be frustrated, he may be all those things, but he's going to open him back with open arm, or welcome back with open arm.
I'll say again, once Ben Roethlisberger went down, to me, if I were Mike Tomlin, I would be looking for an exit strategy. I'd be looking to get to Atlanta or someplace else and do a whole remake over the same way Andy Reid went to Kansas City and transitioned into a whole nother situation where he can coach for 10, 12 years. If I'm Mike Tomlin, I'm looking for that kind of exit strategy in Pittsburgh.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval ratings for Todd Gurley.
You!
Yeah.
You!
Oh. I'll tell you what, this may be your last day if I'm big dummy of the day today.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Like that? That's Todd Gurley.
I tell you before?
You don't care.
I know what side my bread is buttered on. Marcellus, you got to get this heat then, man.
Oh, man, you sorry.
Hey, man, how you going to show up? What's that word you used in the A block with Coach?
I don't remember.
Microcosmoisms. So you just going to sit up and just show off your little Ivy League education?
I know.
Hell, that's why they never let you play football when you was a kid. You're always showing off.
I had three words.
We all know you went to school in South America. You ain't got to show off.
I know three big words. That's it. Can I use
All right. Let's talk some Todd Gurley. Who is starting to get frustrated as his role in the Rams offense has been diminished this year. Gurley and the Rams take on division rival Seattle tomorrow night. Marcellus, you think Gurley has a big game?
No, unfortunately. I'm rooting for a big game, but on a short week and a guy who's already being phased out for whatever reason of this offense, I don't see him responding. Whatever the physical issue is, and then that short week, they're going to try and have more of a balancing act, but I think that's going to be Brown and other running backs supporting him. No.
I expect big things. We talked during the commercial break, and I think that they overlooked Tampa and thought Tampa was a game they could get away without using Gurley.
Makes sense.
Saving him for this Thursday night game on a short week. I'm expecting big things from Todd Gurley.
Get it, Todd.
Uncle Jimmy, what's your take?
Hey, man, I'm going to tell you right now, man. I'd like the record to reflect that I'm in full concord with Todd Gurley in this matter.
Where's your big word?
I understand how the brother feels. You know, we all know that I'm the best player on this team. And right about now, it's safe to say to speak for yourself is running the wrong offense.
you the best player on this show.
No, I knew that was coming.
I have no idea who the offensive coordinator is for Speak for Yourself.
Not you.
But I'm going to tell you right now, y'all need to run a more Uncle Jimmy-friendly scheme of things. See here, listen to me, Darkless. You sitting up there with Big Dummy. Y'all Jared Goff. Ooh. Y'all supposed to be the leader of this team. But I need y'all to know, people around the team, around the league, is still trying to figure out how y'all got them contracts y'all get.
We eating, right?
You know, but the question is, are the fans really getting their money's worth? I wait.
Yeah,
now this brings me to the next person on the team.
Okay.
Mr. Darnell.
Oh,
he the Aaron Donald of this team.
Oh, wow.
Overpaid and underplayed. Let me ask y'all a question. Why y'all keep letting that boy take all them steroids? It ain't improving his performance. That boy is the highest paid T-shirt salesman I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Now, this gets me back to my favorite subject, me. All right, now let's be real.
Yeah.
Uncle Jim is just like Todd Gurley. But I just ain't got that Todd Gurley money. I ain't got that contract. See, Uncle Jimmy's the only one on this show that take a risk on a daily. See, I understand my career can be over at any time. See, I know for a fact I ain't got but one more time to let the word bitch slip out of my mouth before I get called up to the top office.
You can't say that.
But these is the risk I'm willing to take for the team. Never let it be said that Uncle Jimmy won't do something strange for some change for the team. Y'all got folks on Twitter talking about, what's wrong with Uncle Jimmy? How come he can't get more playing time? Is it a load management issue? Hell, Uncle Jimmy look like he got a problem with load management. You seen my work and my receipts with the blue M&Ms. Y'all know damn good and well I ain't got no problem with load management. Damn it, sign me. Pay me or play me, one or the other.
I'm gonna see.
Hey, LeBron, come holler at your boy.
Fair play. Gonna be on Uninterrupted.
Hey,
get you a show on Uninterrupted.
Hey, something. I sweep the floor at the shop. I be that little man. Hey, you tell him, boy.
Let me get to my approval rating. Dude,
every barbershop got Gurley. That old dude.
Might be my favorite one.
I've got him at a 70 at All-Star. I drop him 6 points in job performance. Everything else stays the same. Still an All-Star. How the hell you got him at a 51?
Yeah, well, one, we were coming off the Super Bowl, and that was already low, and now it gets lower because he hasn't responded, and all-time status got affected. Think about that, because if he's healthy, and this is what we got to measure him by, not as good. You know I love me some Todd Gurley, but just performance-wise.
50. Good. And that's why you got Big Dummy of the Day right there.
All right.
Scout team.
All-star right and now. Scout team, a tie online.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.